InvestorIdeas.com podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of InvestorIdeas.com podcast. In today's podcast, I interview Jorge Olson, who is the CMO and co-founder of Hempico Co. Incorporated, trading on the NASDAQ as HPCO, as well as Green Globe International Incorporated, trading on the OTC as GGII, where we discussed Olson's background that led him into the cannabis industry, how Hempico aims to be a market disruptor in the industry, the benefits of moving away from reliance on overseas manufacturing, as well as the industry as a whole.
Okay, so today I'm talking with Jorge Olson, who is the CMO of Hempico, as well as Green Globe International Incorporated. Jorge, it's great to be able to talk with you. You have an interesting story as far as people playing in the cannabis sector. I was just wondering if you could go into a little bit about your background and how you ended up at Hempico, as well as Green Globe.
Sure. My background is in fast-moving consumer goods, in creating products and distributing products. That's the way I started in this business about 20 years ago. Before that, I was an executive in software companies, so a lot of processes. I brought those processes into fast-moving consumer goods, and I started with wholesale distribution into convenience stores. That was my first business in this sector. From there, I had my 500 stores in San Diego that I distributed with direct store delivery with my own trucks going store by store. I scaled that to 17,000 stores across the US, plus all of the corporate accounts that you send it to the warehouse. But with trucks, we were delivering to 17,000 stores. And then these were all products that I used to develop and then manufacture in China. I went from there to beverages, vitamins, nutraceuticals at that time. I wrote a book about 18 years ago called Build Your Beverage Empire. By the way, in 2 weeks, I launched the third edition of that book. I'll get you a copy. That's Build Your Beverage Empire, third edition, 18 years in print. So a lot of beverages. I've done a lot of beverages in that time. Sandro and I met about 17 years ago. We were the Miller distributors for Mexico. We were Budweiser. We were the Miller distributors, Rockstar, Monster, a lot of different products we sold in Mexico and in the US. So creating products and distributing products has been what I've been doing all this time. When the hemp bill passed, Sandro, my partner, and I decided to start Hempico. And to start disrupting the $1 trillion tobacco industry with smoking alternatives. And hemp is an incredible alternative because all of the cannabinoids now turn it into a functional smoke, something that you can smoke after lunch to get focus, or you can smoke it at night to go to sleep, such as CBN, for example, CBD also for relaxation, et cetera, or the party smokes, right? A Delta 8, HHC, and these other hemp delivered THC, now they're calling it. So all of this, we started after the hemp bill passed. We manufacture. So our goal has always been to manufacture products, just like we did before for 20 years, and then to sell them into these convenience stores. We're still doing the same thing. Green Globe International came about because we did a reverse merger originally into Green Globe International, ticker symbol GGII. Now, after this happened, we were approached to do an IPO. So we did the IPO of one of the daughter companies, being Hempico. So Hempico is one of the daughters of Green Globe International. We have other sons and daughters of GGII, but that's the one that's public. So now we have two publicly traded companies. Hempico, HPCO, is the ticker symbol on the NASDAQ, and then the parent company, Green Globe International. That's the way we came into this business.
I'm glad you gave such a very concise description of how that company came about. One of the things I want to ask about is, obviously, it's pretty ambitious to take on the $1 trillion tobacco industry. What were some of the considerations you had when you're first basically approaching that task? It's pretty monumental. There's obviously going to be some issues as far as manufacturing, as far as production, as far as sourcing hemp. What have been some of the issues, if any, and sort of how did you deal with that?
That's a wonderful question. Running hemp cigarettes through a machine is not easy. And that was the thing that took us the longer. It took us 2 years to be able to run hemp through a regular cigarette maker, because our hemp products look exactly like cigarettes. They feel like cigarettes, so that it's easy to make that transition. So the number one problem that we had was running the hemp. When cannabis becomes legal federally, we can also run cannabis through our machines, which is even more difficult because of the oil. So it's even stickier than hemp. So that was number one. It took us 2 years. We finally finished that. In the process, we discovered about 14 pieces of intellectual property that we have that we will, or we're not sure if we're going to patent all of them, but we have the intellectual property in our portfolio, and then we can decide if we patent it. We do have a few patents, but with the in processing and customer experience, the manufacturing itself, that was the biggest issue. The next biggest issue is education of the consumer. Now, the products that you see on the marketplace right now smell like cannabis and they taste like cannabis. So if you take our products, this is a 10 pack, for example, of the real stuff, hemp smokables. If you take this product, you will see, or this one that looks more like a cigarette 20 pack. This is our partnership with Rick Ross. They look, feel, you can tap them, you can open it, it has cellophane, etc. That was what we wanted, to look exactly like a cigarette. And in the education, the first part of the education was to the stores, because when we started this a couple of years ago and we went to a store, they opened it up and they said, no, we're not a dispensary. We can't sell pot. Wait. I promise you it's not pot. And they say, well, it smells like pot. It looks like pot. It tastes like pot. So we can't sell it in our store. So that was a big, we had to bring letters from the attorney. We had to bring the lab tests, even visiting a liquor store in the corner, we had to go with all of this paperwork to prove. Now, that's gone, right? Between all of the education of all of the distributors across the U.S., that's kind of gone now, and that's not a big issue, but it was an incredibly big issue. Now, all of these products that I mentioned are for early adopters, right? They look like cigarettes, et cetera, but they smell like cannabis, taste like cannabis. So they are for early adopters, cannabis smokers that say, yes, I want the benefits of hemp, CBD, CBG, HHC, Delta 8. However, to your point, how are we going to disrupt tobacco with cannabis? Well, we are and we're not. Cannabis is one part of it. Now we know that more Americans smoke pot than cigarettes. So I think that was a great win for the entire industry, not just for tobacco. For everybody, that's a great win. We still have all of these trillion-dollar smokers out there. What are we going to do? Okay, so this is the plan. Number one, it cannot smell like pot for the regular smoker. Now, this is the smoker that maybe takes a smoking break after lunch. Not the one pack a day smoker. This is the social smoker. They do a cigarette after lunch. Maybe they go out and they have a drink and they say, I smoke when I drink. That's what we want first. We're going after that consumer. Not the pack a day, but the social smoker. For that, number one, we need them to feel something that's not nicotine, right? When they smoke it, they need to feel it fast. Number two, it cannot smell like hemp. I mean, like hemp or like pot, because then the whole smoking break, they're going to call HR on you if you smell like pot. Or if you're out in the bar, in a barbecue, maybe you're smoking a cigar, somebody else is smoking some tobacco, you light up our hemp and the kids are going to look at you funny, the hosts are and you're going to say, no, I promise, it's not pot, it's hemp. Good luck. So we already achieved the first one, getting the smell out, right? We have a patent and we can de-smell it. So it can smell like whatever you want, a candle or even a cigarette. We can do whatever we want with the smell. The second part is the function, what you feel, and we're working on that. With the HHC and Delta 8, it's easy because it's a party smoke. So you can have a beer or you can have a drink, right? It can be non-alcoholic, or maybe you're having a beer or something at the party, and you say, okay, I know I can smoke one of these or one of our Delta 8s with one drink and nothing's going to happen. I'm not going to get high with smoking one. And that's what we want going forward, that you can smoke one drink, let's say one alcoholic drink, and one party smoke, HHC Delta 8, maybe 20 milligrams or something like that, where you can drink it and smoke it, drink it and smoke it. Again, if it's a pot smoker, they can smoke a 80 milligrams of Delta 8 and they're fine. But I'm not. I can't do that. So I need the 20 milligram Delta 8, for example, or 50 milligram that I can enjoy three of them or four of them throughout the barbecue or the party or whatever we're throwing, and then be the social smoker that I have my drink and I have my smoke. So that's the future that we're going for. Attract not the early adopters that we already have, but the social smokers, and go after that market first.
You mentioned a lot of interesting things there. And definitely that was going to be one of the things I was going to ask you about, is how do you deal, obviously, with all of the negative perceptions? Because no matter what, yeah, anyone smells anything close to cannabis, thoughts go through their minds. So it's interesting that you've developed IP technology to specifically deal with that problem. So I guess the other thing is, you know, the touching on the effect part is there really, because this is the same kind of discussion I'm sure you've heard as well. You know, when you talk about the cannabis industry, is a lot of people are like, it's going to disrupt the alcohol industry, it's going to disrupt tobacco. But so far, we haven't really actually seen that much of a change. A lot of people who drink still drink, and they just now happen to also smoke weed or something like that. How do you actually see, when you look at the long term of this industry, will it actually negatively impact these things, or will it simply be, as you mentioned, you know, like a social smoker is a perfect example. That's a person who smokes cigarettes and drinks. Neither thing is detracting from the other. In fact, both add to the other. Will cannabis just fit in that same category then, in that now people are going to probably be doing three things instead of just two in the past?
I think you're right. I think your assessment is the correct one. I know that the heavy-duty cannabis smoker has a different opinion, but that's a completely different market than the one that we're in. If you know heavy-duty cannabis smokers, or maybe you're at a party with them, they might light up their joint, or maybe they have a vape, and they can do a couple, and then they're in a party. And maybe a few people there want to do the same. However, the party smoker is going to do that, and they're going to go back to their nicotine tobacco cigarette and their whatever they're drinking, either a beer or hard alcohol, let's say some whiskey. They're drinking some whiskey, or other ones are drinking beer. They'll do the puff and they'll do great. Now I'm high, but let me continue drinking because I enjoy the taste of whatever they're drinking, beer or wine or hard alcohol, or if you're in the West Coast, hard kombucha, which is a thing now over here, right?
Oh, yeah.
So whatever your drink of choice is, right? You can still enjoy it even though you're high. I don't think that's the future though. I think the future is where your cannabis, whatever that is, either hemp derived or cannabis derived, will be in lower doses to complement your drink of choice. In other words, I don't think cannabis will replace the drink. I think it'll combine, just like heavy duty cigar smokers want to drink a specific thing to complement their cigar, being scotch or whiskey or beer or wine or even coffee, right? They complement it with coffee if they're smoking during the day. It will be the same. That's the way I see the future.
That's a great example there. And one of the things I also want to ask about is, obviously, if you can impact, you said you can reduce the smell, so it's not smelling like cannabis. It's not getting that hemp overpowering odor. And you said you could also modify the scents to then smell like other things. Are you looking at modifying just the smell aspect or also the taste aspect? And if so, are you looking at things like being a comparison to a cigar, in that you'll look for specific, you know, basically flavors that are going to complement either a beer or a wine or an anything, even a food, for instance.
Yes, that's precisely the way we're thinking. And those are the patents that we're getting. For example, we have a patent to spray flower. And this is the craziest patent that we have because everybody sprays flower. So that means everybody is infringing on our patent. So as crazy as that might be, we have the patent to spray flower. With what? With whatever. Terpene, smell, taste, we have the patent. In other words, we are thinking at exactly what you just said. That's exactly our vision. So we patented that technology to spray mint flavor, mint odor. And the government is helping us because the government is outlawing flavored cigarettes like menthol and even vapes, nicotine vapes. So that's helped to us because now we are also making vapes, and we're also not nicotine vapes, but hemp derived vapes. And then we can do menthol. So the outlawing is only for cigarettes, for tobacco cigarettes, not for hemp. So we can put a pack of hemp mint cigarettes. And when the smoker goes to the 7-Eleven, Circle K, Valero, or whatever, and says, I want my usual, and they're going to say, I'm sorry, but it's now illegal to sell menthol cigarettes. They have tobacco. However, if you don't want to quit right away at this instant, we have these hemp cigarettes that have menthol. So we see that as the future. And this is why we have that patent. We have an additional patent for the filter. So we can flavor the filter, or we can add aromas to the filter so that the customer experience starts when you open the pack. And then when you put it in your mouth, you already taste the blueberry or mint or whatever we're doing. And yes, we want to complement these flavors. Number one, according to our customer, our target market, and then according to the partnerships that we have with celebrities and their target market. For example, Rick Ross, that we're doing hemp hop with them. I have some rosé here flavor because of his wine, right? So I have these here that complement his wine so that when you're drinking his wine, you can taste these. We're also doing the Snoop Dogg that you already know. And surprisingly, because I come from the beverage industry, his wine, the Snoop wine, is number one right now in the US. And I just found out in Mexico as well. I was born and raised in Mexico, and a couple just told me that from Mexico that they see it in their tiny little store over in the south of Mexico. And they blew my mind. What do you mean you see it there? It's so hard to get American wine consumed in Mexico. Well, we have it in every store over there in our little town. So what we're going to do is we're going to come up with a blend to complement the wine, for example, and other blends to complement Snoop's target market. So yes, your vision, what you're thinking, it's exactly what we're headed.
So another thing that I want to ask about is with, obviously you're doing the sort of spray and the filters to add the flavors. And one of the things that's been very weirdly impacted by a lot of what's changing with tobacco laws and then cannabis coming in is actual like whole leaf tobacco has become really hard to find in certain states, as well as in Canada, as well as shisha products, which is like a herbal mix with tobacco. And there's still also another big market, which I know Snoop Dogg is a fan of, which is blunts, where you're including tobacco and cannabis or tobacco and hemp together. Is that something that you're going to be exploring, or is that something you're specifically staying away from because of the sort of negative press that's already been attached with tobacco? Because I do find that there's a little bit of a resurgence of people looking for like pipe tobacco and actual raw, real tobacco, as opposed to going the cigarette route. And again, if you're a person like myself and a lot of people who cannabis consumers, the blunt world has kind of gotten very weird, and it's very difficult to find certain things because they're attached to nicotine, which has its own laws, or tobacco, which has its own laws that are separate from cannabis. Is that something you're going to explore or no?
Okay, so let's divide all of the question, blunt, whole leaf, shisha, pipe. Let's divide all of them. We will do all of them, except that we cannot do it with tobacco.
Okay.
Now, let's explore why and how we're doing the other ones. Okay, so hemp for a pipe. Yeah, we can do that. No problem with no tobacco. Hemp blunts. We're already doing hemp blunts. We're doing the hemp blunts in the different brands that we have. Here's an example of one right here for hemp hop. It has two blunts and they're 100% hemp. We're also doing rose petal for some of the largest in the US, co-packing for them. Now we are also doing, this is a blunt, but it's already pre-made. So let me open one for you. This particular one has a glass tip, but we can make it without the glass tip. We can do candy, ceramic, or different styles of tips. So if you look at this one, it's already made. You don't have to roll it. You just put your cannabis in here, right? And this is the glass. And we can put, you can see here the glass. It's not a filter, right? It's just a tip. We can do filters. We can do paper. We can do palm. We can do hemp. We can do candy. So the resin stays and then you can eat it. So we can do all of these. We're already doing it for dispensaries. But now we're going to do them to sell them retail under our own names, like the real stuff, and our partners such as Rick Ross, Snoop Dogg, Cheech and Chong, et cetera. So this is already done. We have a factory in Mexico, in Tijuana, my hometown, where we're developing all of these. We have research and development, and then we have our own handmade machinery so that we can do this faster, because traditionally all of this is done in the Philippines, Thailand by hand, and then shipped. And a lot of the problems that you mentioned are also supply chain problems, because you can't get, number one, it's the price is up to 10 times for a container. And then they're stuck in the port. So supply chain is a big problem. This is why Raw came to us, for example, for manufacturing of a lot of their blunts, because of the supply chain problem. Now, mixing it with tobacco could have some positive aspects, such as we're disrupting tobacco, slowly giving somebody an alternative. So you can mix it 50-50 maybe, right? Or we manufacture in Europe, you can buy half and half. It's illegal to do that in the US.
Okay.
So that's one big concern. We cannot do it because it's illegal. So even if it was beneficial to the consumer, because they can start stepping down from tobacco, maybe we do an 80% tobacco, 50% tobacco, right? That would be amazing, but we just can't. You cannot mix hemp and tobacco. It's illegal at the moment in the US.
Is there any expectation, even from tobacco companies, are any of them looking into lobbying to have that regulation changed at some point? Because it seems like eventually, like I said, if I'm looking at just negative stigmas and negative press, tobacco has definitely garnered more negative press and negative attention than cannabis has. A lot of cannabis now is undoing the sort of propaganda from the past. And I could see that for a lot of tobacco companies, eventually this becomes a good PR move for them of well, we're using more natural products. We're going this more organic route. We're involved with hemp. We're involved with cannabis. And they could even add some of the, medicinal benefits of cannabis or hemp into the sort of aspects of the product, saying, listen, it's not that bad because we're doing it differently. Is there any discussion of if that law could change at some point, or is that something that's probably going to remain pretty indefinitely for a long while?
At the moment, there's no lobby to change that particular law. Tobacco companies are betting on the other technology, which is I quit tobacco smoking technology, and they're going into the new slugs. So that's what they're lobbying right now. And according to Philip Morris, because they put this in the Wall Street Journal as a full page ad, they say that they're going away from combustible smokes and into the slugs, where you have the apparatus that you put the little slug. Now, we're manufacturing those in hemp. by the way. So we have that technology where we're doing the same, exactly same thing, but with hemp and cannabinoids instead of tobacco. Because if they're betting on it and they're going to change the entire infrastructure, we're just going to use their infrastructure to sell ours. Now, the other thing that we are trying to push on them, and some of them are now adapting it, is biodegradable filters. So some of the tobacco houses have some of their products with biodegradable filters, which is a big win for us in the industry. Our products, we try to go as biodegradable as possible, even plastics and things like that. So the future of tobacco, I think it's towards these bullets or slugs. That's where it's going more than mixing. Now, the way you make those slugs is like paper. It's like making paper. So once you make the paper, you can put in nicotine tobacco with hemp. So if the law changes and they choose to do that, we would probably be the ones with the license to do it, because we're preparing all of that infrastructure right now to make it in the US.
It's very smart that you guys have all your bases covered. One of the things that you talked about was something I wanted to ask about, because it's been a discussion for the last year or so, at least, coming out of COVID, is papers and sort of the problem with a lot of this overseas production, which is that you add lots of companies that were reliant on different paper product companies that come from overseas. And that's a big part of the cannabis industry, is the pre-rolls market. It's a huge percentage of the sales. And if all of their papers are being sourced from the Philippines and those shipments aren't coming in, they're just kind of at a standstill. And that becomes a huge problem for the industry, whether you're looking at, you know, either hemp cigarettes or cannabis THC cigarettes or anything. It all sort of runs into the same bottleneck. As you are looking at this and doing, you know, North American production, are you finding that this is a really competitive space right now? Because it's something that I think a lot of us were hoping was like, the hemp industry is much bigger than the cannabis industry. Cannabis is a very good industry. There's interesting aspects there, but hemp as a textile, as a paper product, as an accessories product, has much bigger market share that could potentially be much larger globally, but we haven't seen much. How competitive are you finding this landscape, and sort of, are you guys one of the few people who's actually bothering to do this?
I think we're only one of, right now, to my knowledge, we're the only ones that are manufacturing this here. Yes. Everybody else is importing from overseas, and we're manufacturing right here in the border. And we do cones as well for pre-roll. So a lot of the cones that we produce, a lot of these tubes that we produce are for cannabis. A lot of them are for hemp, but a lot of them are for cannabis as well. So yes, we think that niche alone of having products that we can produce here and then have them in the major distribution center anywhere in the South, right? In Texas, in Arizona, in California, we can have it like that. 4 or 5 hours, we can have something at HBI's warehouse in Phoenix from Tijuana, same day.
Yeah.
And that's an incredible competitive advantage for us and for our partners and clients.
So you mentioned HBI and Raw there. Are many of these paper companies interested in moving products to North American manufacturing because they've been burned by this in the past? Like, is there a heavy interest for them to do that, even if there's a price difference?
Oh, yes. There is a price difference, of course. And what we tell them is, sometimes we even have a little shock with the pricing. Let's say that a customer comes to us and says, we're short 5 truckloads per month, right? So we're short 5 truckloads per month. And that's what our master distributors are asking for, right? One truckload per distributor. Can you do it? And we say, yes, this is the price. Oh my God, that's more than we paid. It's twice or three times or whatever. And we say, well, are you making money? And they say, well, of course we're making money. And then we say, well, what's the cost of not having 5 truckloads?
Yeah.
They say, okay, I get it. So we tell them, hey, we don't have to be your first choice. It's fine. We can be your plan B. And a lot of them are saying, actually, you're my plan A now, because we're in San Diego. We have we answer the phone, they can come see us, or we go see them no matter where they are. We see them at every trade show. We're traveling constantly, visiting distributors, manufacturers. They don't get that from the Philippines or Thailand. They can't get on the flight for 2 or 3 hours and be at our plant and then make changes, right? Maybe they want to make changes to a tip or something. They can sit here while we're doing the research and development in the other room and playing with these things. And then we're even doing the artwork here in-house. And then we present all of this and they say, oh my God, done. I can go home now and my logistics supply chain problem is solved. And that's what we do with our private label services. Now, our goal is to put our own products in 100,000 convenience stores across the US. That's the business model for Kimpaco, either through our partners like Cheech and Chong and Snoop Dogg, Rick Ross, or with our own 100% like the real stuff.
Yeah. Another thing that I know has been discussed a lot lately within the papers industry, there was a big bunch of news articles that came out of testing in California, where a bunch of the different papers that were being used tested high for heavy metals, for pesticides, for different problems. Is that another thing, sort of an aspect that your company can kind of stay competitive against alternative products by saying, you know, you're following different quality standards. That's part of the price, essentially, is that, yeah, it does cost more, but also the product quality that we're going to be offering is of a higher caliber. And this doesn't mean that you're going to have one of your pre-rolls testing for heavy metals in the future.
That's exactly right. We do take a little bit longer because of the testing. Yeah. And all of this testing we do for everything, even for our cigarettes. We receive product and the product might be even hot. Maybe it's fine for heavy metals. Microbials are fine. We're one of the only ones that are testing for microbials. But maybe it's hot. We can't even put it in our building. We have to leave it outside. And once it comes back that it's not hot and that it's compliant, then we bring it to the building. So if somebody wants to make something with us, we tell them to send one box. We test the box first before they send the truckload of raw materials. If it's hot, then we let them know so they can adjust. They send the raw materials, we have to test it again because we have the highest quality standards. Even our Green Globe International facility, Green Star Labs, is NSF certified. Not only is it NSF, we have the highest level of certification within NSF. What that means is we test at every single level of our manufacturing, not only when it comes in or goes out, at every single step. One step comes wrong, we have to scratch it and start over. So those are the standards that we have. And yes, this is when the company says you're my plan A, when that happens.
Yeah. Well, I can see that you guys are very well positioned right now, because again, this is a discussion that's happening in some of the largest cannabis markets. You know, California is an insane market and where a lot of the taste making comes from for the cannabis industry. And this is a big discussion. It's like, well, it turns out a lot of these papers we were buying from overseas were not good quality. They have issues with them. They're being misbranded or misrepresented and the product quality isn't there. And this is, for a cannabis producer specifically, you know, they do so much testing of their product to make sure it's safe before it goes on the market. And the last thing they would want is to be burned by literally the papers that they put something in at the end. And I do think that there's, from a consumer's perspective, as well as a company perspective, both groups now are like, this is something to consider. We actually have to look at this quality. And just like with food and with everything, I mean, you came from beverages, right? People used to buy shittier beverages and lower quality stuff. Now we're living in the age of craft beer and, you know, kombucha and health drinks. And that's where the consumer market goes eventually, because people realize, I don't want to buy garbage.
That's right. I agree. That's where it's going. And that's why we invested in the infrastructure to be able to wait, because we had to wait. And then once regulation started trickling down, then we start getting the calls.
So I guess just in sort of final thoughts here, where can you sort of find Hempacco products right now, and sort of what markets are you guys in, and then what's kind of the anticipation for the year?
Sure. You can buy online. Everything that we produce will be on realstuffsmokables.com. So you can go right now and buy hemp hop products, Cheech and Chong products, etc. As we develop these new products for a consumer, for the end consumer, we will post them there. A lot of the things that I talked to you about are bulk at the moment for wholesalers and large stores. But as we develop the packaging for the consumer, we will put them out there. We typically sell to master distributors, and then they distribute it to distributors that then do the stores. So that's the way it trickles down to the stores. We think in this year, we're going to have some of the major metropolitan areas where you can call yourself national, a national company, if you sell in California, Texas, Florida, and New York. So those are the big, big markets for any consumable, especially a fast-moving consumer good. They each have about 20,000 convenience stores. So you can imagine right there, you hit your 100 convenience stores goal without even Arizona and all of these incredible other markets, right? Those are incredible markets. However, those are the largest ones. Those are the ones we're going after right now with master distributors. And then we take care to educate, because that was our background, not only the distributor, but also the stores. So our job is to go and educate the people who work in the stores so they can be of service to the end consumer and provide the right information and the right products for the right consumer. That takes education. So with that, and then with our vending machines that will have ads and education in the stores, right? So it's going to be the clerk helping you, but also these screens that we have in our 600 plus vending machines. All of that is going to ensure the sell-through, because it's one thing to get the product to the store. It's another thing to stay in the store. So that's the plan for 2023.
That sounds very exciting. And like I said, I'm personally very, very thrilled to see a company like yours doing what you're doing, because again, I see that there aren't really any, North American based alternative companies really doing this. It still is an extremely untapped side. I think, you know, like I said, for me personally, hemp is the real gold mine. Cannabis is very fun. There's a lot of awesome aspects to it, but I think that hemp as a product has, you know, almost infinite potential. And when you look at how many industries it can impact and how good that is for everyone, like this is not only is it, a better quality product, but it's a product that legitimately is better for our environment. It's better for sustainability. It's better for local businesses. Like we can do this a lot better and a lot of people can benefit of it. It's great to see companies like yourself actually doing that. Because I think it takes people to succeed to bring more into this industry and get it to where it's really at scale.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for talking today, Jorge.
Well, no, I'm glad you invited me. It's been a pleasure.
Once again, that was Jorge Olson, the CMO and co-founder of Hempacco Co. Incorporated, trading on the NASDAQ as HPCO, and Green Globe International Incorporated, trading on the OTC as GGII. To find out more information, you can click the links attached in the article or visit ggiigroup.com or hempico.com. That's all for today's podcast. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. That's all for today's podcast. Podcast is now a certified word trademark on the blockchain through Cognate Incorporated CM certification. InvestorIdeas.com podcasts are also available on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play Music, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, and TuneIn. If you'd like to be a guest or sponsor of this podcast, please contact InvestorIdeas.com. Investor Ideas reminds all listeners to read our disclaimers and disclosures on the investorideas.com website, and this podcast is not an endorsement to buy products or services or securities. Investors are reminded that all investments involve risk and possible loss of investment. Investor Ideas does not condone the use of cannabis except where permissible by law. Our site does not possess, distribute, or sell cannabis products.